Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This week in PlayStation, we're talking about No Elder Scrolls 6 for PlayStation 5, what PS5's 2024 exclusive lineup could look like, and Tim's time with Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. We'll have all this and more because this is PSI Love You XOXO. Welcome to the show, everybody. That's Tim. I'm Greg, and you can get PSI Love You XOXO over on patreon.com/kindoffunny. There you can watch us record it live, get it ad-free, and get dozens of monthly episodes, all for your own perusal, enjoyment, and exclusive pleasure. If you have no bucks to toss our way, support us on the Epic Game Store, Fortnite, Rocket League, or Fall Guys with the creator code kindoffunny. You can get PSI Love You XOXO for free with ads and without all the exclusive content on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames and podcast services around the globe. Thank you to our Patreon producers, Brave Athos, Jedi Master Deadpool, Delaney Twining. Today, we're brought to you by BetterHelp, but let's start with a PSN message from you! Tim.
Yes.
Two exclusive previews in a row. Two PSI Love Yous in a row for you.
I love it.
How's that
good.
Feel?
It feels real good, honestly. Yeah. I got to play Spider-Man 2, like you're alluding to, and talked about that on last week's PSI Love You. This week, get to talk about Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. Really kind of living my best video game life, Greg.
Yeah.
It's rare I get to go to a preview event these days. It's rare preview events happen like they used to in a post-COVID world. So being back in LA, surrounded by games media, playing brand new video games that are awesome, it feels good.
Yeah.
It felt special. It was very nostalgic in and of itself. Just be around people playing games. But there was also just an energy. And there's something about being at a preview event where the games are good.
Yeah,
is extra, extra special. So
talk really to me about this. Obviously, every listen to last week's PSI Love You XOXO, they know about Spider-Man 2.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to find out momentarily about Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
Mm-hmm.
Spider-Man 2, you talk about being an in-person preview event, really went that extra mile with statues and Kraven's throne and all this different stuff, blah, blah, blah. Did Rebirth do something similar?
No, no. Rebirth was definitely a lot less. It was just in an office, you know, the bunch of demo kiosks.
Sure.
Very similar if we did an event here,
where it's kind of
like in the lab, just a bunch of setups next to each other you get to play. We saw a little short presentation, a video from a lot of the voice actors and the directors of the game, and things like that. Whereas the PlayStation event, that was one of the more all-out events I've ever been to.
Yeah.
It felt like going to an E3 where there's like the big game, like the Breath of the Wild takes up like a third of the convention floor, or like if there is a bigger game, Skyrim, I remember having a really big activation. It kind of felt like that, but it was just Spider-Man. There was a lot of stuff that, I mean, you can see in all the videos that other people posted, but there's a lot of stuff that I haven't seen on the internet that was there. Like one of the main rooms, like the big lunch room that we were able to all gather in, like around the interview space, was like themed like Coney Island.
Okay.
Like there, it was just like, and there was active like
hot dog vendors.
Like hot dog vendors and like cotton candy and like carnival games that you could play.
Okay.
It was a lot. And I will say, for as amazing as the whole event was, nothing I enjoyed less than out of nowhere, every couple minutes, balloons just popping because people are throwing the darts at them, and it was a little gunshotty. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Didn't like that at all.
Well,
didn't like that.
It blew back on him. Yeah, I thought Spider-Man 2 had the runaway best event, but apparently a little gunshotty.
Right, besides that, though, it really did. Great, fantastic event. And I feel like without all the extra stuff, because like the extra stuff, it's fun and it's silly.
Yeah.
But like very, very high quality experience in terms of how they let us play the demo of it. And I mean, played almost 3 hours of Spider-Man 2. And they just
how many hours of Rebirth you play?
Rebirth is a little tougher. So Rebirth, I got to play two different sections. There's okay. two separate demos, actually, that people will be able to play at TGS if you're out there. One of them was more story-based, and one of them was like giving us a little taste of the open world.
Okay.
The story-based one, they said, was about 15 to 20 minutes, and then the open world bit was like supposed to be about 45 minutes.
Okay.
In actuality, I feel like both of them were about double the length that said.
Okay.
Yeah, so I feel like, and it wasn't just me. I feel like seeing everybody kind of where we were, like, yeah, everyone seemed to have played, we were told an hour total, and it felt closer to 2 hours total.
I want to hear all about Rebirth, but before that, I, of course, want to start with a PSN message from you. You can write in to be part of the show, kindoffunny.com/PSILY, just like Christian Buckley did. Christian says, hey, Greg and Tim. So far this generation, it seems like the PS5 gets 2 to 3 big exclusive releases per year. 2022 saw Gran Turismo, Horizon Forbidden West, and God of War Ragnarok, where this year we get Final Fantasy 16 and Spider-Man 2. Lots of shade there at Forbidden West, but we'll let it... Or Burning Shores. So Horizon, Forbidden West, Burning Shores deals. Uh-huh. You know what I'm driving at there.
Who could have forgot that?
It rolls off the tongue.
Yeah.
Look, and all, I guess all the PlayStation VR 2 games as well. Yeah, looking into 2024, we know Concord is coming with, I mean, we know Concord is coming, and with Bungie focusing on the final expansion of Destiny 2's Light and Dark Saga next year, I doubt they have Marathon ready to launch on top of that. So assuming we get another big three exclusives, what's the best case scenario for 2024's lineup? Concord, Fair Games, and Final Fantasy VII Rebirth? Does Wolverine or Death Stranding 2 have a realistic shot of making it? And how would you both feel if the majority of next year's PlayStation exclusives end up being experimental live service multiplayer titles? Timothy.
Well, a lot here, man. I mean, even I think since this question was written in, we got the answer for Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. February 29th, yep. Getting a release, which is very exciting. Sooner than I think most people anticipated. Even I was on the train of thinking Rebirth was coming sooner than we would think. This is earlier than that.
Really?
Yeah, I was thinking March, like maybe April, which would coincide with Final Fantasy VII Remake's release back in 2020. But yeah, that February 29th is earlier than expected, especially hot off the heels of Final Fantasy 16 being this June. So yeah, Square's big AAA Final Fantasy projects kind of being belted out here, which is me and Buster talking
about. Maybe one day they'll meet expectations.
What's up?
Maybe one day they'll meet expectations for sales. I'm talking about this, the news in the past week where they were like, oh, yeah,
whatever.
Square Enix stock still not great. And people are mad about that.
That's, man, like, it really, really, really blows my mind how much people can twist things to being one way or another just like by either adding or omitting words. Where it's like the blame on Final Fantasy 16 for their stock being down. It's like, why does this feel like you have a weird agenda against this game? Like, it's truly, truly bizarre. But, yeah, I feel like Square's really been proving to me and to many gamers out there that, like, the joke of their games being delayed constantly and, like, oh, will we ever fucking see it? It's, like, getting harder and harder to make that joke. There's still many jokes we could still make, Greg. Don't worry.
I love making jokes. Can we make some jokes? Yeah, let's make some hot jokes.
But yeah, I feel like with that kind of now being secured, and I don't expect that to move, that's a big one for exclusivity in terms of PS5 games. I think Wolverine's next year.
You do.
I do, man. Okay. It goes back. I feel like everything I just said about the Square side of stuff of, hey, man, they're kind of hitting things time and time again now in terms of the big projects and big promises. They're delivering. Insomniac are the kings of that. Insomniac,
for sure.
This era, this generation specifically with PS5, they have just been putting out banger after banger in so many different ways, whether it's a full title like Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart, a remaster like Spider-Man, or a somewhere in between big game title with Miles, and then Spider-Man 2 coming. We know Wolverine's coming. I think that with Spider-Man 2, with what I played as Spider-Man 2, and with how polished it is, and with the way that Insomniac is talking, I there's a confidence and there's a, oh, we got this. And I honestly think there's a dog in them. I think that there's the conversations we've been having forever about, like, we love Insomniac, but
when do they become an S tier
studio?
When do they
become S tier? This S tier conversation, I feel like they hear that and they're okay, you know what? We're going to show up. And that, take their time to show up. Show up doesn't necessarily mean that we need a game every 6 months from them. But if they can prove that they can do that type of thing. Not 6 months, but you get what I'm saying.
100%.
I think Wolverine's 2024. I think that there's a chance it gets pushed, but I think that it's the most likely outcome.
Of course, you know, industry insider Jeff Grubb has been on the record, right, as saying he's heard as early as fall 2024, but very much the studio is still talking about 2025 being a case there. And so, yeah, since this question was written in, because I did pull and I did omit something, one of the games that Christian had tossed in here was talking about next year and was saying, you know, okay, so what's it going to be? Is it going to be Rebirth and Helldivers? He tossed Helldivers in there. Of course, Helldivers is now officially February 8th, 2024 as well. And this is where you start getting into the weird one of, like, the question stems from 2 to 3 big exclusives a year. Are we counting Helldivers as a big exclusive? I'm excited for Helldivers. I know the world might not be, but I'm still stoked to see it. So it's like, you look at that, it's like Helldivers, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, right? Confirmed. Wolverine, questionable. I wouldn't bank on it. I would hope, because I want to play that game as soon as possible, I wouldn't bank on it. And then Concord is in there because, of course, when Concord got announced, it had a 2024 release date on it. I can't fathom that game coming out next year. Mm. And that's not me based on anything insider or any questioning the quality of it. It's just that when you announce this game and you have, all right, cool, here's it's May, it's this big thing, they just show the ship flying through space in a CG trailer, right? And they're like, we're coming 2024, and this would be then. You can include Helldivers, but I'm not going to. This, I think, would be the tip of the iceberg. This is PlayStation Live Services.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're going to work out a lot of kinks, and I think they're going to learn a lot of lessons as they get going on that over at Firewalk. So I don't think 2024. Maybe that's just me being, you know, conservative, glass half empty.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the glass half empty is not the wrong approach when it comes to these live service games, because we've seen so many fail in the last couple of years, and for PlayStation to take such a big swing on so many of them, with different perspectives and backgrounds in terms of what they're trying to accomplish, but they clearly are experimenting and trying to create a new vertical for themselves in terms of what we think of as first party Sony studio projects. And even though we're pushing back on it, they are pushing for it. So these things are going to happen. I do think that how these games are marketed and talked about is going to have to be different than the way that they talk about their single player games and what we expect to know from them. So I feel like we just have too little information at this point and too few patterns to be able to even try to glean some type of understanding of a roadmap out of. So yeah, I feel like it's equally likely or unlikely.
Exactly. It's sort of just cat right now. I just think that more than likely games get delayed, it seems. And I would think that there's a lot of moving parts to Concord, so I'm not going to do that. I wouldn't bet on Concord being there. So Helldivers, Final Fantasy, and then you get into the interesting stuff of, like, I put Rise of the Ronin on here, right, from Koei Tecmo. Mm-hmm. Obviously Silent Hill 2, Death Stranding 2. Again, these are exclusives we're talking about, right? And I'm not counting PC, we're counting Xbox stuff.
Yeah. Death Stranding 2. Then this is a very ignorant question that I should know the answer to. Death Stranding never got ported to Xbox, right? Just PC?
Correct.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, so yeah, that's another big one, man. How wild is it that PlayStation has exclusivity of Final Fantasy and
God damn it, Kojima? I'm wrong. Hold on, I'm googling it as I was talking. I'm like, yes, no, it's on Xbox.
Oh, it is. Okay.
Yeah.
So
always annoying. What's going on that fucking Xbox?
Death Stranding 2 then is so far just exclusive to PlayStation. Correct. Yeah. Okay. Cool. Yeah, I mean, they have that. Like, those are huge however you want to talk about it, party developments there. So. I feel like even when they don't have a year with multiple banger PlayStation Studio projects, they can lean on those things. But with next
it's exclusive, and Death Stranding is published by PlayStation, right?
Yeah.
So that's the thing of, like, the Death Stranding 2 is being published.
Exactly. Yeah.
Which they say doesn't exist anymore. It's a full first party in that realm. Just tossing it out there to cover.
Exactly.
So personally, out of that thing, I mean, Silent Hill 2 is going to happen, I imagine.
I think so too.
That's what they've said. And I do think that Death Stranding 2 comes in.
Me too.
So then I think my bet for what it would be more than 2 to 3. I think you get Helldivers, unless you don't want to count that. You Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, and then Silent Hill 2 and Death Stranding 2.
Yeah, I think we get Death Stranding 2 and Wolverine next year.
God, I hope we get Wolverine next year.
Yeah. Concord, I'm real 50-50 on. Silent Hill 2, I expect it. They said it's going to happen. And with the scale and scope of that game that we know of, like, I think that they'll be able to. Rise of the Ronin, I'm not up on enough to really make a call. And on top of that, I mean, let me ask you this. Is there something that's not here that we expect?
No. I think the way games have been marketed and the way, we're talking about big exclusives.
Yep.
So, like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't think, I hope I eat my words, but I don't think there is a PlayStation studio right now sitting there biding their time, and they're going to announce, theoretically, I guess, Game Awards and then launch next year.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think that's going to happen with Ghost of Tsushima 2. I don't think Sony Ben's new IP is going to have that.
I mean, who even is out? Who's available, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of studios we don't know necessarily.
But I mean, for the level we're talking about here, like for these big exclusives, because it is Guerrilla, Sony Santa Monica, Sucker Punch, yeah. Insomniac. Did I say Naughty Dog?
I mean, you didn't say no, or did you?
I don't know. But
I mean, Bend.
Yeah,
they have an IP. Blue Point. What's Blue Point up to?
Oh my God, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
what is Blue Point up to, everybody?
Gorilla. I mean, you can talk in there. I mean, Housemark. Like,
yeah. I mean,
again, big exclusive? But see, different thing, to everybody. But I think great exclusives. Different question.
And exactly. And like, there are levels to this. And I do think that Housemark are currently kind of at a graduation point potentially.
Sure. After Returnal,
After Returnal, their next one could be like a big hit. I mean, not to say Returnal wasn't. I think that was, but like, Returnal seemed to be a much bigger hit than Rezogun or anything.
100%. Undeniably.
So I feel like they're already in a different type of conversation. So what is their next game? And looking at their development timelines, we are due for an announcement from them, right? They've been working on porting. They've been working on enhancing Returnal the last couple of years, too, adding up those modes and stuff. So
I feel like it's hard to look into Housemark and come up with, we're about due. Because I think Returnal was such a different game for them, and obviously the one that then after it's published they get acquired and become a different thing. And so now I would think if I was PlayStation, right, like the idea is I'm giving them money to fund their next game and their next idea, and like, let's make this be your breakout success.
Yeah.
At which point I don't think we're on like the next Machina, Outland, like where they were churning these smaller arcade gameplay they were known for titles to get out the door, to keep the studio going, to have people making games and making money.
Yeah.
Now I think you have the time to take a breath and look at what the successes of Returnal were, because gameplay obviously was awesome, but so was the emergent storytelling and what they were doing there, right? So what do you do taking that to your next first full, we are a PlayStation studio. Mm-hmm. I think they get a lot of time with that. And so, Returnal came out in 2021, and then, like you said, it's been ported since
early.
Then and stuff. Yeah. So it's like, they've definitely had time to be working on something, but I think that's something you work on and you get fucking right.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, it's going to be interesting because I think that they are about to enter that top tier conversation.
Yeah, I think next game's make or break on that. And I think they'll fucking crush it. I know, it's weird, right?
That was weird.
I said make or break and then break it up on the screen. I digress. We don't know what Housemark's working on, but we do know what Cloud Strife's working on, and that's Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. Tim, you've already covered the big broad strokes. You went down to L.A. You played a bunch of it. It's coming out February 29th, 2024. There you are!
That's me, my boy.
Ignoring Cloud, pointing
my boy
Zach.
Yeah. And then completely ignoring Sephiroth, who's behind me. This picture's actually really cool, the kind of key art they've put out for Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. Keen-eyed viewers out there have noticed that The colors on this key art here are clearly segmented in kind of like three verticals.
Yeah.
And there's this picture with me is not the best way to show this, but there's Cloud on the left, Sephiroth in the middle, and Zach on the right. And on the right, Zach is in front of like a very blue tinged part of this photo, which coincides with the Crisis Core cover art colors.
Gotcha.
Then we have Cloud over there with the green, which is the more classic Final Fantasy VII look of it all. So it's just interesting kind of like what this means, like especially with the game that potentially is dealing with timelines and things like that, of like what they're trying to get across.
Yeah.
With the color imagery of it all. But in addition to this, around the room we were in, there was a whole bunch of different character posters with the same type of background.
Was Jesse there?
We got no Jesse.
Sorry,
you know what I mean, but Tifa and Aerith and all of them. So that was all cool, and yeah, I got to play about 2 hours, like I was saying, two separate demos, one story based that was a flashback where you get to play as Cloud and Sephiroth together, which was very, very, very cool. And then an open world bit that's just outside of Junon, which is one of the bigger locations from the original game. Very, very iconic. A lot of story beats happened there. Got to play a little bit of the open world leading into that section of the game with just giving you a taste of like what that open world's going to be like in this game. And you got to shuffle between a bunch of different party members in that as well. So the way that it works is very similar to Final Fantasy VII Remake, where you have a three-party system, and you are able to, on the fly in combat, switch between who you are actively controlling, and then you can also shout out commands to your team to heal or do whatever you need them to do. In between battles, you can switch out who's in your party. So in the open world section I was in, I think that there was like five or six characters that you could choose and cycle between, and then get them into your three-party party to do the different battles. And depending on which battle you're in, obviously some characters like Barret's more long range compared to Aerith, who's dealing with the magic and stuff. Tifa's getting in there and boxing. So depending on if you're facing a flying enemy or like somebody that's more tanky, like you might want to go in with a different strategy. But what was interesting is the open world stuff really focused on hunts, where there was a would be like points of interest around this like open space. You can walk around and find a whole bunch of different materials that you'll be able to then craft.
I'm crafting.
There's weapons, there's upgrades, there's abilities. It's all the stuff that you'd expect from an RPG. But then there's these different kind of enemy encampments that you will find. The area we were in, there was three main big ones. And as you go find them, you can see on the top left of the screen here, there's extra challenges for each of the big battles you get into. So there'll be like three different like bonus challenges in addition to just beating the enemy. So it'll be like pressure an enemy, stagger an enemy, and then defeat all the enemies within the time limit, right?
Sure.
And then you get better ranks on that. You can actually replay the battles to be able to do that. Really just kind of adding more gameplay and more things to do in the game, which is pretty cool. Very similar battle system to the first game, like I was saying, which is awesome. Like we all really enjoyed it. Our game of the year in 2020. And yeah, absolutely loved that game. And this is kind of taking things out of the game a little bit and getting into where we're talking about like the preview events and all the stuff we've been going to. It's really interesting to me because the Final Fantasy VII Remake demo is something I will never forget. We went down, this was early 2020, like I think before the world went to hell, it must have been. And it was still a very, very private thing. Me and Bless both got to go, but I think there was like five people total in this really small office in downtown San Francisco. And they just handed us the controller, put headphones on, and they're just like, go for it. And we got to play for like 3 hours. And I was just blown away. Like, I couldn't believe I was playing through a remake of Seven that looked this good, played this good, sounded this good. It was real.
Yeah.
And it was one of the most surreal video game experiences I had because it was living up to every dream, every expectation, and just surpassing all of it. And I remember walking out of that demo, me and Bless grabbing lunch, and both of us just being dumbfounded. And for different reasons, him being new to the Final Fantasy VII world, but being like, oh my God, I get it. And me being like,
no, you don't get it.
Oh my
dude.
God, dude. Yeah, like, this is crazy. Like, we got to do the Airbuster boss fight with that music, and that was just so good. And it was just so over the top and hype and perfect. And they just nailed the vibe of why Final Fantasy VII is special. So that is always going to go down as one of my favorite preview demos ever.
Yeah.
Playing Spider-Man 2, I'm like, damn, this was like a pitch perfect demo. Like, any question that we could have had of like what makes Spider-Man 2 special, they kind of answered. It was just very, very well designed, how open it was, but also how much of the main meat they were giving us. It was just so, so, so good. So getting to this demo, I think that I'm going to be in the minority on this compared to a lot of the other previews that might be out there. But I don't think this was that great of a demo.
Wow.
Yeah. And like, especially coming after Spider-Man and like, oh my God, how good it was. And my memories of the Final Fantasy VII Remake demo, playing this, I was kind of like, huh.
So is this a case of you weren't underwhelmed or overwhelmed, you were whelmed? Like, my problem with my hype or lack thereof for Rebirth has been that, you know, and I'm sure most people who watch know, I love Final Fantasy VII Remake, and I've never loved a Final Fantasy, period. I've tried VII so many times on the original PlayStation, never could do it, yada, yada, yada. This one I did play all the way through, had a great time, immediately hit you up afterwards and had to have you explain what the fuck's going on, like what's different and yada, yada, yada. But like, I was like, wow, that was great. Years later, here with Rebirth on the horizon, I am like, but where did I leave off and what was going on? So it's like, I feel like it's a known quantity of what the combat and gameplay is going to be, which I will enjoy to play again. But I'm not like, oh, I can't wait to get back to X, Y, and Z. It's just like, yeah. Oh, I enjoyed that, so I'll enjoy this probably.
Yeah, man. Like, there's a lot to say here. Now, I want to just off the rip say, I enjoyed the hell out of this, and I can't wait for this game. I'm not worried or concerned about this game whatsoever.
Another game of the year. You're calling it game of the year again.
I'm not calling it game of the year. Hey, 2024, who knows? Who knows? Yeah. But I do think that it's awesome, and I can't wait for it. I just think that the demo itself wasn't that special or like really... really great at showing what's going to make this game better than Remake.
Okay.
In the way that Spider-Man 2, I clearly know what makes it better than Miles Morales and Spider-Man.
Gotcha.
I do think it's also an uphill battle in some ways for them, and some of those include the fact that people are most nostalgic for the opening hours of Final Fantasy VII because they're the ones that most people have replayed the most because that's just how games work and time works, and the Midgar section is... something that, you know,
iconic.
Yeah, it's iconic, and people also, when they replay, like, oh, I'm gonna beat Final Fantasy VII again. Yeah, great attempt, but really, you're gonna make it 10 hours in. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I just feel like there's like extra nostalgia for all of that. But, you know, the hardcore people, most people's favorite part of the game is post Midgar. Like, it's when it really opens up. So I think that a lot of this is going to speak very loudly to a lot of people. I mean, I know that for a fact it's Final Fantasy VII, but I think to your point about like being lost in the story and all that, I think they'll catch you up as much as you possibly could be. It is very convoluted and timelines and stuff that they're dealing with. But I imagine that they're going to like set the stage for the Greg Millers of the world that loved Remake, but it's been 3 years even since then. They'll get you caught up. And they're really stressing that like they're trying to make this game, playable if you just played Rebirth, like even just play this and the story should be like good enough and like character driven enough that like it'll work as a standalone. But of course, it's added if you play,
of course,
the other and the entire compilation and everything else about Final Fantasy VII. But another thing against it for me was how fresh off of Final Fantasy 16 I am and how much I loved that.
Yeah.
And a lot of people here are kind of funny, love Final Fantasy VII Remake's combat because it's more action focused. Compared to, obviously, the originals, turn-based active time battles, and most Final Fantasies, even the more action-y ones like a 15, it's still turn-based at the end of the day to some extent. And Final Fantasy VII Remake is the same, right? Where it's action-y, but it's also slow down time, like go through the menus to choose what spell you want to cast, like all that stuff. And it was a lot harder for me this time to
come off of
16, which was full to the action side. So it mainly affected me in terms of maneuverability on the battlefield of wanting to close the gap between me and an enemy to like slice them, just getting over there. There's not a dash. There's not a jump.
Sure.
And so it was just kind of hard for me to wrap my head around that. But then, you know, after playing it a little bit, you start understanding how the game wants you to play it. And like you sit into it. And I loved the battle system in Remake, loving the battle system here. I do think there's a couple too many elements going on, and maybe this was just me playing this limited demo, but earlier I was showing in the open world sections, some of the asks of you for the additional challenges are pressure the enemy, stagger the enemy, and we were all playing, and sometimes things would happen, sometimes they wouldn't, and I asked, I was like, hey, like, I'm trying to, like, I've staggered them. I want to pressure them. What's the difference there? And they couldn't even really answer me. They're like, oh, it sometimes when you attack them, it does that. And I was like, okay, but it's a challenge. Like, I'm trying to do it. And so I was like, I felt really stupid. Then I heard like three other people ask the exact same thing and they're not really being answered. And I was like, this is kind of weird. And it just kind of feels like maybe just one too many things that are in the combat system that at least for this demo didn't really make sense.
You hope when you actually play the game from start, right, you get introduced to that, you understand a little bit more. They teach you what that is.
Yeah, so those things were a little frustrating to me. And then a problem that I've had since Final Fantasy 15 and Remake didn't solve this at all is how imprecise the interacting with things in the world is, where you need the camera to be just right so the triangle prompt pops up so you can hit triangle and don't move too far or else it's not gonna open it the way you want to, and it becomes this like battle with the buttons and just trying to get everything lined up. And I felt like I ran into that so many times in this. And again, 16 didn't have that problem. So it was just hard for me in multiple ways in terms of quality of life stuff to feel like we're regressing a little bit. So that's the negatives. Positives, it's Final Fantasy VII Remake 2. Like, these story beats without fail, get me going. I am just so into this. I love the performances. I feel like Final Fantasy VII Remake's one of the greatest accomplishments it had was how real the characters felt, and like the way that they spoke felt not just like weird kind of like archetypes, but it felt like what Barrett should sound like, what Tifa should sound like, Cloud, all of them. Like, it felt like the definitive version for me of a, it lived up to my expectations. And they seem to be continuing that for sure. It's beautiful. The locations, the environments, it's just unbelievable. Seeing places for the first time really is just so impressive. This is Under Junon here. And I can't even believe that they made Under Junon look like this. Because it just, this is how it should look, Greg. Like, yeah, this is, they just really nailed that stuff. But then on top of that, they just nailed the silliness that Final Fantasy VII has. It could be so serious and so, like, the world is ending and we're here with each other. What are we going to do? Avalanche, all that stuff. But then you got Red 13, this little, like, talking tiger guy. And then he rides a chocobo, Greg. And when he rides a chocobo, he gets on the chocobo and he rides it like a human.
Yeah.
And it's awesome. It's just awesome. But like, they just commit to that type of silliness and just like, yeah, this is the world that we're in and like, deal with it. You get to ride the chocobos, which is awesome. Like, kind of, especially in the open areas, it's very necessary because they can get kind of big. But then one of the weirder things, going back to me thinking this demo, you can pet the chocobos as well.
Everybody. Hey!
But one of the weirder things about this demo is, we got to play this open era. We got to play the flashback scene. The trailer that dropped has so much other shit that the demo did not have.
Sure.
And like, obviously that's how things are going to work. I'm just a little surprised because the trailer showed so many of the mini games. It seems like every mini game is back, which we did not think would have been the case. But like, the amount of things that they showed, the Cosmo Canyon and Casa del Sol, just like the Golden Saucer, the big casino Vegas-y type area where a lot of the mini games are, they're all there. And they show that stuff, a lot of the different characters in the trailer, Vincent and stuff, like really exciting stuff. And the demo we played, I was just kind of like, this is just not what I would have done.
We're back to, like the demo. This isn't a comment on the quality of the game. It's just a comment on the demo not hyping you up as much as the trailer did.
Yeah. Oh, like, by a long shot. Yeah, that trailer, I was like, yeah, this is pitch perfect. And the demo, I was like, yeah, okay. You know, this is, and it sucks because I feel like there was a couple things that I didn't love about it. And one of them was in the story-based part of the game where you're walking around your Cloud and you're with Sephiroth. And it's a flashback that's 5 years before the events of Remake. And you're kind of climbing up this mountain, and it felt like Uncharted 1 a little bit. Okay. Like the climbing mechanics, gotcha, where it was like, oh, here's the clear line I'm supposed to go up. Doesn't feel good necessarily. It's a little slower than I'd like it to be. And it kind of just felt like I'm going through the motions to trigger the next either combat scene or cutscene.
Sure.
And I think that is where I'm at right now. And again, I feel like I'm coming off a lot more negative than I want to.
Be critical.
But critical, negative, different things. I want to make sure I'm being critical here, not negative, because a lot of good here. I think that the story and the cutscenes are incredible. The combat, with the exception of the weird pressure stagger thing that, like, I think is a me problem and a presentation problem more than an actual thing for the final game, was thrilling and so much fun. And the dual character attacks that you can set up, it was just awesome, especially Cloud and Sephiroth fighting together. Like, the level of they know what they're doing with it is off the charts. Sephiroth calling Cloud a little puppy. It's like they're just playing with their fan base, and they're delivering hardcore to a lot of the little freaks out there, okay? Let me put it that way.
I want to talk more about that,
yeah,
the Cloud Sephiroth thing.
Uh-huh.
But I want to talk to our little freaks and, of course, remind them that if you are a little freak for Kind of Funny and PS I Love You XOXO, you need to get your beautiful buns over to patreon.com/kindoffunny. Over on patreon.com/kindoffunny, of course, you can get each and every episode of PS I Love You XOXO ad-free. You can watch us usually live as we record it. And, of course, you could get all the other podcasts the exact same way. On top of that, you could get 300, that's right, 300 plus bonus episodes of content we've put up since October when we moved into the spare bedroom, and you could get cool exclusive physical goods. But I digress. You're not on patreon.com/kindoffunny, so here's a word from our sponsors.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. I can't even count the amount of nights I lose sleep because I just can't stop thinking and my brain just won't stop talking. It turns out one great way to make those racing thoughts go away is to talk them through. Therapy gives you a place to do that so you can get out of your negative thought cycles and find some mental and emotional peace, and it can give you the tools to find more balance in your life. Some of my best friends use BetterHelp and love how helpful it can be for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire, you get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. You can find more balance with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/kindoffunny today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/kindoffunny. BetterHelp.com/kindoffunny.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
So when this demo starts and it's Cloud and Sephiroth, do you pop immediately? Because like that's obviously such an iconic duo that I, even as somebody who doesn't connect with Final Fantasy VII original, I knew that relationship, let alone to then get to the remake and have it there. And then now be, hey, guess what? We're on to the other side of even having a Crisis Core, even having Zack involved in all of this.
Well, that's the funniest thing you bring up is Crisis Core, where we've played this before. In Crisis Core. Yeah. This is a flashback scene that we have seen from multiple perspectives, even in the original game. Remake might have even had a scene of it or something somewhere. Yeah, I think it did, where we get a flashback where Tifa's in her little like cowgirl outfit.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, so that's this scene here. So we've seen this before, and this is where the fun begins when it comes to Final Fantasy VII Remake, Rebirth, all of it. It's like, I love these games, and I've played the majority of the Final Fantasy VII games multiple times, but some of them, it's been a long time.
Yeah, it's been
and even Crisis Core, I did just play it in December. But it's like, when there's lines of dialogue that are so close to how they used to be, it's hard to tell, is that different on purpose, or is that just modernized? Like, are you trying to tell me something with this line different?
Yeah.
Is your use of a word, like a tense of a word, like in terms of past or present or whatever. Is that on, like, is that trying to tell us where we're at in this world and why certain things happened, or
is
do
it
just
good modern localization kind of stuff?
Exactly. Yeah. So it's interesting. So that stuff I was like thrilled by. Of like, I don't did this happen? Did we fight this guy before? I don't really remember. So I love that type of stuff. But yeah, the last thing I want to say about the in between the combat and story beat stuff is like there was a lot of just busy work. So in addition, like the climbing up the mountain, there'd be like there was this part where there was like a fog that was out on like one of the landings, and there's like this big vacuum machine, and you need to bring the vacuum machine over to like suck up the fog.
Yeah.
And it just felt so like, we don't want to let you get to the next cutscene yet. Like, there wasn't fun to be had there.
Yeah.
Busy and for work, a game that, like, I wasn't having that much fun moving around in, having to then fight the camera a little bit. Real specific nitpicks here, but it's like, I do think that's where the criticism comes into play of, like, why it's not so fun to get from point A to point B. And Remake had some of that as well, but I just kind of wish that, especially the move to an open world, I wish that that stuff would have been ironed out, so it would be a little bit more fun to just move around in between the big set piecey stuff.
So with those criticisms, you play it, everything you've said so far, I think, again, is coming off on that whelmed variety.
Yeah.
Based on when you talk about this trailer you saw that then made you pop and stuff like that, do you feel like this game is going to exceed what you've done in this demo, or do you feel like you're now setting your expectations a bit lower? What do you think that means for everybody else playing, et cetera, et cetera?
It's going to be interesting. I feel like, again, this goes back to, what is your favorite thing about Final Fantasy VII? Is it the beginning, middle, or end? Yeah. And I feel like there are a lot. I would say my answer is the beginning. And I feel like what I got out of Final Fantasy VII Remake delivered everything I could have wanted. I feel like there's a potential here, because this part of the game is not my favorite, I think that there is a chance for it to wow the hell out of me. And there's some potential surprises and changes, switch ups, or not, that they may or may not do, that I am completely intrigued by and I think could like be really, really special. There is just a lot of stuff that I'm not the biggest fan of. I personally don't really need a whole bunch of mini games and all that kind of stuff, and that's what we're gonna get. So I feel like with what I played on a couple days ago, I feel like all my nitpicks, all of my thoughts, whatever, I would give that experience a 3 out of 5.
Okay.
And I would give Final Fantasy VII Remake a 5 out of 5. I don't know where I see this
netting out,
but I think it could be 3, 4, 5. God, I hope it's not a 2. But like, I don't think it will. I really don't think it will be. But yeah, no, I'm surprised at how whelmed I am by the demo.
That sucks.
The trailer definitely upped it. But yeah, and hey, playing it right after Spider-Man, there's a lot of factors here. Sure. I just want to explain to everybody where I'm at. But like, being completely honest, I think I'm going to be lower than a lot of other people. But I thought that demo was okay.
All right. Anything else we didn't cover on it that you want to talk about? Were there additions to combat? Did it just feel exactly the same?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest addition to the combat was the synergy attacks, where you're kind of like fighting with this new thing. And what was really cool about them is they don't take up your active time bar. Okay. So you can kind of just use them as much as you want. So it's more about like how much time that all takes up and getting people in the right spots and just using the right combinations of them. But it really made it feel like you have a team that's working together. And yeah. It was a limited demo, so I don't know if this will last for the entire game, but like, they felt fairly bespoke. Like, it didn't feel like pre-canned things, even though obviously it has to be to some extent.
Sure. But weren't seeing the same animation over and over.
No, and if you did, the camera was in a different place.
Okay.
And like, just it felt like every enemy encounter meant something, which was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And yeah, there were a lot of things that I was like looking at where I'm like, oh man, these like hooded people are walking around and like, what are they up to now? Like, what are them being here means a lot, but what's it mean? And so I'm definitely excited about the what ifs of it all, and the answers. They feel like they're putting out a lot of things for people to be like, hey,
look at this,
you're thinking for a reason, and we're gonna deliver on that.
Okay.
No Zach in my demo at all.
Were there any big reveals in your demo for story? Okay.
No.
Okay.
No.
Because obviously I know we're on to this different timeline. And
yeah. In the demo, I guess the biggest things we see are the group kind of seemingly meet Yuffie for the first time. Yuffie was the star of the DLC Intergrade that came out. And it seems like that was their first like major introduction to each other. Or at least an early understanding of who she is. But yeah, we ended with a big boss fight that was actually super, super fun, fighting this big like water dragon thing. And you're on this platform, and like water would shoot up from underneath you, so you need to like get away from it. So it was very active, a lot of rolling, and like it was fun, and music was thrilling. Like, it really got your heart racing. And then this little dolphin pops out of nowhere and kind of helps you out, and it ends with the dolphin jumping up and Cloud jumping on the dolphin, awesome. Mario Yoshi style, alley-ooping off to finish off the bad guy. And I was like, this is why I love Final Fantasy VII. Never change.
All right. Final Fantasy VII Rebirth isn't that far away. February 29th, 2024. Here comes the alley-oop you were talking about, I assume.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, come on now. That's teamwork right there. That's teamwork. I mean, I'll be interested to see how it all nets up. Where this comes out and what it shines down to him. But for now, let's move on to this week in PlayStation. I got one story for you, ladies and gentlemen. No Elder Scrolls 6 for PlayStation 5. This is Wesley Yinpool over at IGN.com. The exclusivity status of the Elder Scrolls 6 was one of the burning questions following Microsoft's $7.5 billion buyout of Bethesda back in 2021. Xbox boss Phil Spencer has danced around the issue, most recently insisting a decision has yet to be made. But now, according to one of Microsoft's own documents, the debate is over. The Elder Scrolls 6 is set to skip PlayStation 5. Axios reporter Stephen Totillo tweeted a freshly unsealed document lifted from the Federal Trade Commission, FTC, versus Microsoft trial over the Activision Blizzard buyout, and it includes a list of announced Bethesda games, along with which platforms they will be released on and their release window intentions. Of particular interest in this section is Elder Scrolls 6, which, according to the document, will not launch on PlayStation 5 and instead launch on Xbox and PC only. Its release date is shown to be TBC, but the game is, quote, unquote, expected 2026 or later. Microsoft has yet to make a formal announcement about the launch platforms or release window for the Elder Scrolls 6. IGN has asked Microsoft for comment. And of course, this was before, we're recording this for an embargo, before today's news on Tuesday of Xbox being like, actually, we post these, or not even Xbox, we post these documents by accident. Phil saying this sucks, it got out this way. And obviously, plans are in flux, and these are old things too, so they might change, and yada, yada, yada.
Yeah. No real surprise.
Not here. At all. I mean, again, after Starfield, you this is to be expected, let alone just why do you buy studios to push games around?
Exactly. And me and Bless broke this down a couple days ago on Games Daily. But yeah, it's not a surprise now. It's obvious. Obviously was a surprise a couple years ago. But That's how this works. Now that Microsoft owns Bethesda, yeah, the Bethesda games are going to be exclusive to Xbox and PC. Cool. Elder Scrolls 6 is one of those.
Yep. Yeah, it's doing business is what they bought them for and everything else. Still sucks. To a degree, because I'm playing my Starfield over on Xbox, having a great time. Like, God, I wish I was trophy hunting in this.
Yeah.
Because I just don't care about my achievements.
Everyone has their specific things, man.
I know.
You know, and that's.
Hey, I'm glad I have a reason to turn on the Xbox. I'm glad I have a reason to use that Xbox.
Yeah.
Let's move on to PlayStation picks. This is stuff that is coming out this week for you to keep your eyes on. Of course, Lies of P, Mortal Kombat 1, and Cyberpunk Phantom Liberty and that 2.0 update. This is not even the rare occasion where we just crushed this at Kind of Funny.
Oh, yeah.
Lies of P reviews up on the Kind of Funny Gamescast. Mortal Kombat 1 impressions from Blessing are up as a Kind of Funny Gamescast.
And, no. Blessing's impressions from Mortal Kombat are up as a just a TikTok video.
Technically, I'm on vacation, so I don't know.
Yeah, later this week, we're actually recording our review, bonus Gamescast. So no Xcast this week. Instead, we're doing a Gamescast that will be me, Blessing, Mitchell Saltzman, and Leif Adams giving our thoughts on Mortal Kombat 1, which I am over halfway through the campaign.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to talk about it.
You have a good time?
Having a great time.
Yep.
Yeah. This is my first ever story campaign for a Mortal Kombat. It kicks ass.
Very interesting. Really, all right, great. And then Cyberpunk Phantom Liberty, we're about to review in a time warp. Mm-hmm. So by the time this publishes, the Cyberpunk Phantom Liberty review as a games cast will already be live. But as we are recording this, we have not recorded the Cyberpunk Phantom Liberty review yet.
Mm-hmm.
Gonna be a fascinating one.
It is,
because I think I'm way lower on it than
spice, everybody.
Yeah. And I mean, way lower. We'll see. But when I popped in and Bless was playing it, I was like, "Oh, what do you think?" He's like, "I love it," or whatever. I was like, "Oh, okay." I did not have. I mean, I'm not again. A lot of what you said about Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, the demo rang true with me with this game. Like, it's a good time, but it's like, okay, I'm whelmed.
Yeah,
we'll talk about it on Gamescast. You can get that. It should be live if everything went according to plan on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames and of course podcast services around the globe. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that is, because Paris is joining us. I know Andy's played some. I'm excited to talk about it because I've talked to zero people about it on vacation. Jen has not wanted to hear about it, so
yeah,
we'll see what's up.
Love that.
Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, Tim.
Yeah,
I don't want you to get out of here yet. I almost transitioned. I forgot you wrote something in for PlayStation picks. What did you pick to play on PlayStation this week?
Well, Mortal Kombat 1 has been the main thing I've actually been playing on PlayStation. But I wanted to give a shout out. Dolby Atmos is here. The beta update is now just part of the official update. So you can download the new PS5 firmware. And one of the newest things is Dolby Atmos support, true Dolby Atmos support. And it takes everything that was done for the PlayStation Tempest audio engine and it just applies it to Atmos for people that have Atmos supported speakers, which is a lot more people than all these other weird specific things, because a lot of sound bars have Dolby Atmos support, and like, sure, a lot of it's just simulation, whatever.
Sure.
But what's really, really, really special about this is I thought it would never happen. I do have a full Dolby Atmos sound system.
Yeah.
Because I care about that stuff a lot. And it was eternally frustrating to me that PlayStation, because of its focus on Tempest and how it did things, you were only getting the true benefits of their 3D audio, the sending the pictures to Mark Cerny stuff. You're only getting the benefits really with headphones. And it was just like, all right, like, and specifically like some of the wireless headphones. So like, you're giving up on quality to get the fancy 3D stuff. All that felt a little backwards to me. The ways around it were stupid and convoluted. Microsoft had an exclusivity deal with Atmos. I don't know what happened with all that, but we won out here. And Atmos is now here, and seeing the little Atmos thing pop up, I was like, oh my God, this is about to be awesome. Now, it's still early. We haven't really had too many major releases come out. We haven't had any releases with this kind of in mind for audio design. But what's cool about it, without going too long on this, Greg.
Go for it. Yeah.
Dolby Atmos.
The whole show's about PlayStation.
It's special because it is like 3D audio, whether it's Tempest or Atmos or I'm forgetting the other one right now, but any of the different 3D audio kind of the DTS, that's what it is, DTSX.
Down to sound.
It is. So there's 5.1, there's 7.1 when you're talking about surround sound, right? And that's just essentially designing things so this, like, vocals come out of the center speaker, and then the left and right speaker are mainly like music and sound effects. And it's really just kind of decided on what, how do we simulate the sounds coming from here, coming from there? And then if you get the back speakers, you'll just get like, oh, yeah, real stuff, explosions and things like that. What makes Atmos special and Tempest and all the 3D stuff is it's object-based sounds. So it's not so much, oh, this thing's on the right side of the screen. It's literally this object sounds like this wherever it is. So they design audio cues based on this helicopter that's going over you. And because of how video games are made, like in engine and things like that, you can stand there and spin the camera around and it's going around and that's going to affect what's on your screen, which is affects where that sound should come from.
Okay.
Which is different than a movie or a TV show,
of course.
It's a designed experience. So it is more of a designed thing of like, oh yeah, there's these sounds behind you that are a bit more immersive just because they're trying to add jungle sounds because the characters are in the jungle. In a video game, you can spin it around and there's a waterfall here, but now the waterfall is there,
depending on
the camera.
Yeah.
That is where it gets interesting because the waterfall is, it's object-based audio. So it's coming, the when you spin around, you're going to hear it cycle around you. And trust me, I spent hours testing
just in the jungle spinning cameras. Yeah.
And some games handle a lot better than others because it is kind of just translating what's already there. Ratchet and Clank, I was a little let down by. I'm worried because it's Insomniac and Spider-Man's coming out. But I also think that they know what they have going for them there. But Returnal blew my mind. If you guys have access to Returnal, Dolby Atmos, if anything, pop it in, spin around, see what's going on. It's very damn impressive. And I'm happy this is here. It's going to be really big for PlayStation.
Okay. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm excited to see more about that. I'm excited to talk about Cyberpunk over on the Gamescast, and I'm excited to keep doing PS I Love You. Remember, PS I Love You XOXO is your PlayStation podcast. You can pick it up each and every week on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. Podcast services around the globe, usually on Friday, except when there's a cool PlayStation embargo for us to meet. And remember, of course, the best way to get PS I Love You XOXO is patreon.com/kindoffunny. On patreon.com/kindoffunny, you can watch us record the shows live, usually. You can watch the other podcasts get recorded live. You can get them all ad-free on demand and ad-free live. You can get 300 bonus episodes of content. You can get cool exclusive items. You can do so much only on patreon.com/kindoffunny. We will be back with another PS I Love You XOXO next week, but until then, it's been our pleasure to serve you.